We just set the machines up. Okay, we're ready to roll. Watch it.
Hey, knucklehead.
It's time for American Knucklehead, an Average Joe's take on the state of the nation. Hello, friends and neighbors, and welcome to American Knucklehead. I'm your proud host, Joe Knucklehead. This is episode 10 of the show. That's right, 10 whole shows, the big 1-0, double digits, or as the Romans used to say, episodus X. I gotta say, I wasn't sure that I was actually going to be able to crank out 10 whole shows, but there you go. Gotta give many, many thanks to those who have had the fortitude to continue to listen to and support the show. I got a question for all of my fellow news nerds out there. Is it just me, or does CNN's increasingly ubiquitous Fareed Zakaria look like the illicit offspring of Willem Dafoe and the Joker? No, it's probably just me. One of the premises of this show is that the political discourse in the United States has basically been hijacked by ideological extremists on either side of the political spectrum. These are what I like to call the woofers and the tweeters. I figured it was about time to adopt some new verbiage because a lot of our current political vocabulary has become too warped and emotion-driven. Anyway, y'all can check out episode 5 for all of my bright ideas on a new set of political terms, but regarding woofers and tweeters, well, the words conservative and liberal used to have objective and meaningful definitions, but those definitions have essentially been eroded by the acerbic tone of political debate in America over the last 30 years or so. I hate to see language being abused in such a manner, so I'm going to leave those two perfectly respectable words alone and use woofers to describe the nitwits on the far right and tweeters to describe the nitwits on the far left. I think this works a lot better. I also think that onomatopoeias are funny. I've been carping a lot about how the woofers and the tweeters have been dominating the political discussion in the United States, leaving out all of the mid-range, all of us American knuckleheads who are tired of being forced to choose between one bad extreme choice or the other bad extreme choice because our gutless Republican and Democratic politicians don't have the courage to stand up to these idiot wings in their parties. There's been some high-level woofer and tweeter idiocy that's been getting my goat lately, and I wanted to yap to you about it. Now, living in Portland as I do, I've become pretty used to tweeter idiocy because there's a fair amount of it here, and I'm usually able to shrug it off. It's mostly harmless. But there's something happening recently that's really got my shorts in more of a twist than usual. The city of Portland has decided to outlaw plastic shopping bags, effective October 15th of this year. Now, this might seem like a minor matter, and yeah, I'll admit it, it is. But it's the principle of the thing that's got me all worked up. To me, friends and neighbors, this is about freedom of choice. The refrain paper or plastic has pretty much become a cliche. If you don't want to use plastic bags, then don't use them. Get the goddamn paper bags. Just don't take my choice away because you don't agree with it. This is such a typical tweeter move, treating us knuckleheads like we're idiots and restricting our choices in order to save us from ourselves. Thanks, Mom, but I can make my own decisions. I like those plastic shopping bags. I tend to get a lot of use out of the things. But because of this ban that's coming up, I've already started hoarding them, and now I look at my dwindling plastic bag stash, I feel like Gollum gloating over his ring. My precious bags. Those bags have a zillion handy uses. Occasionally, I'll haul my sorry butt down to the gym, and those plastic bags make good biohazard storage containment systems for my nasty-ass old gym clothes. I don't want them stinking up the break room at the bowling alley. Also, I don't know if any of these tweeter dingbats have noticed this, but it rains a lot here in Portland. A typical paper bag can turn to mush between the door of the grocery store and my truck, and I've already had 3 of the damn things fall apart on me in the Fred Meyer parking lot. Okay, I'll admit that my opposition to the plastic bag ban is a little selfish. I understand the concern behind the whole thing, that the things aren't biodegradable, and they make for some ugly pollution. But the flip side of the coin is this. Paper bags have a lot more embodied energy. That is, it takes a lot more energy to produce a paper bag than a plastic bag, And it takes more energy to recycle it. Yes, plastic bags are recyclable. So in all likelihood, this means burning more hydrocarbons to produce that energy for the production and recycling of paper bags. Also, the paper production process involves a lot of nasty chemicals. And if you've ever smelled a paper mill, you'll know exactly what I mean. So perhaps from an environmental point of view, paper bags aren't that big of an improvement over plastic bags. None of that, however, figures into the tweeter logic process. It seems like there's just a simplistic knee-jerk reaction. Plastic bags bad! Ban them! Here's another thing about this bag ban that's got me a little riled, and that's how the whole issue got started here in the first place. The Portland City plastic bag banning comes on the heels of a failed attempt to have a statewide ban on the plastic bags. Now, this whole initiative got started when a trust fund hippie drove his VW van down to an exclusive surf beach on the Oregon coast and was, like, totally bummed to find the beach littered with plastic. This hippie, a guy named Steve Wilson, then decided to devote his life to getting rid of plastic litter. This he attempted to do by sailing around on a yacht, looking for plastic floating on the ocean. Sounds tough, don't it? Maybe you remember a couple of years back when there were reports of how there was a wad of plastic floating in the Pacific that was twice the size of Texas. That report came from Stiv on his yacht, and it got a lot of press and a lot of folks got all worked up about this huge island of plastic floating around in the ocean. There was only one problem with the report. It was complete crap. Turns out that the plastic flotilla is more like the size of Rhode Island, if that. So that's about 0.5% of what the tweeter environmentalists were reporting. Basically, they just made up this story about the double Texas-sized island of crap to call attention to their cause. This exaggeration is a perfect example of the bullshit and hyperbole that both the tweeters and the woofers use to muddy the political discourse in America. This is an ends justifies the means mentality that extremist nitwits of both stripes use to push their agendas. They're so intent on achieving their narrow-minded, foaming-at-the-mouth goals that they're not going to let something as distracting as reality get in the way of their arguments. Now, when it comes to the egregious disregard of reality, the tweeters don't have a damn thing on the woofers. These right-wing loonballs really seem to have a great deal of difficulty distinguishing between what's real and something that they just really, really want to be real. Economic facts, basic American history, common human behavior, it doesn't matter to the woofers. Really, really wanting something to be true, in their minds, seems to be just as good as the actual truth. They don't seem to know the difference between the real world and the world of make-believe. I don't know, maybe they got problems with object permanence as well. It all seems pretty infantile and, well, just plain stupid. To paraphrase English philosopher John Stuart Mill, not all woofers are stupid, but most stupid people are woofers. That may sound kind of mean, but I do have validation on this theory right off the bat. The page of John Stuart Mill quotes that I looked at to verify that quote had a banner ad linked to the Tea Party Patriot website.
A little touch of irony there if you like that sort of thing, huh?
Which provides me with a great segue to discuss the Tea Party. Before I get into a discussion, or rant, if you will, about the Tea Party in general, there's one specific aspect of the Tea Party that I want to get off the radar once and for all, and that's Sarah Palin. Sarah Palin is absolutely, unarguably, completely unqualified to have any damn thing to do with politics in the USA. And it's not because Sarah Palin is a divisive figure that spews nothing but empty rhetoric. It's not because she's seemingly dumber than a bag of toenail clippings. This is not a matter of opinion. It's not an issue of political leanings. It's because of this one, simple, documented, undeniable fact. Are you ready? Here it comes. Sarah Palin is a quitter. She was elected by the people of Alaska to serve as their state's executive, and she quit the job halfway through the term. Just couldn't be bothered with doing her job. She thought she'd make more money on the lecture circuit. As far as I'm concerned, this automatically disqualifies her from involvement in any electoral politics. Look, I don't care if you're the president, the governor, or the town dog catcher. If you get elected to office, you damn well better follow through on the job. You don't quit catching dogs just because you think you're going to have a better time of it bagging groceries down at the Piggly Wiggly. Sarah Palin is a quitter who abandoned the people who elected her to serve them, yet the media seems to have conveniently forgotten this fact. She still pulls in the viewers, so they're still going to keep giving her way more attention than she deserves. And what she deserves is none. Every time she's mentioned in the media, the fact that she bailed on her elected responsibilities should be mentioned too. Today at a Tea Party rally, Sarah Palin, the Alaska quitter, said blah, 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 blah. In fact, that's how I'm going to refer to her from here on in this podcast. I'm not even going to use her name again. From now on, it's just the Alaska quitter. Now that that's out of the way, let's get back to the Tea Party in general. The way I see it, the Tea Party movement consists of two components. The hardcore woofer element, who are really only interested in one thing, which I'll get to in a minute, and the average knuckleheads who have been sold a bill of goods by the Tea Party's marketing consultants. First, I want to reach out to those knuckleheads that have been totally conned by the Tea Party movement. I can understand the appeal because the Tea Party movement has been very good at representing itself as a genuine alternative to politics as usual. Unfortunately, that's bullshit. The Tea Party movement is a cynical rebranding exercise by the woofier elements in the Republican Party, and that's all. They know it's their selfish and narrow-minded fiscal policies that got us into the current financial mess that we're in, and they also know that despite the average American knucklehead's relatively short attention span, we remember whose lack of responsibility buggered up the economy and is keeping nearly 10% of the country out of work. It's the Republicans, stupid, and that's all the Tea Party really is. It doesn't matter that some exclusive advertising consultants came up with a new name for the same old stupidity. That doesn't mean it's really an alternative. Friends and neighbors, you can put frosting on a dog turd, but that doesn't make it a cupcake. And a frosted dog turd is all that the Tea Party really is. Because the Tea Party is really about one thing and one thing only, not paying taxes. That's it. Have you ever looked at the people who attend these Tea Party rallies? By and large, they appear to be well-fed, middle-aged white people, and all they're interested in is not paying taxes. Their philosophy can be summed up in one phrase. I don't want to share. Or better yet, just mine. It's not a political philosophy. It's the irritating whine of a spoiled four-year-old. Mine. Look, friends and neighbors, I want to tell you something that may sound weird. I don't mind paying taxes, usually. I live in a state that's got one of the highest tax burdens in the country, but I don't mind paying the taxes here in Oregon because I see them being put to use to help my friends and neighbors. I see the great public transit network, the awesome library system, the public health care programs that help kids from poor families get health care, the programs that get homeless people off the streets. Then there are other times that I do mind paying taxes, and that's when I see them going for a zillion-dollar military aircraft that the Pentagon doesn't even want, when I see it going to no-bid contracts to unscrupulous government contractors, when I see pallets of $100 bills being shipped off to the Middle East to try and bribe local warlords and troublemakers to be our friends. That's when I don't like paying taxes. That last bit is no lie, by the way. In Iraq and Afghanistan, the government literally shipped wooden pallets loaded with millions of dollars in shrink-wrapped $100 bills. They were used to bribe local officials and tribal leaders and various other troublemakers into cooperating with the military. And there was no proper tracking of the money anyway, no accounting. The government just started handing out thick stacks of cash. Our money, friends and neighbors, taxpayer dollars. Just started handing this stuff out to a bunch of goons. Didn't even keep track, didn't even ask for a receipt. Right now, there's an estimate of nearly $18 billion, that's billion dollars, that are unaccounted for in Iraq alone. Holy crispy crap, $18 billion, and there's probably some other staggering amount in Afghanistan as well. Who is running this damn show? Okay, I'm getting a little off topic here. The point is that we need to have better fiscal responsibility with our tax money. And I know that the Tea Party claims to be in favor of more fiscal responsibility. It's said so on that banner ad I saw on the John Stuart Mill quote website. But if that's the case, where were all these so-called fiscal conservatives back when we were getting into two unfunded, expensive foreign military actions at the same time government tax revenue was being cut? That's not fiscally responsible. That's like going out and putting a down payment on a Lexus right after having your job cut. Bloated defense spending and sweetheart government contract deals, they don't seem to bother the Tea Party too much. Tea Party only seems to get worked up about fiscal responsibility when they start talking about spending that might actually help some of us American knuckleheads. They trot out old Reagan-era myths about welfare queens and homelessness being a lifestyle choice to justify their own greed and lack of charity. No, friends and neighbors, by and large, the Tea Party goobers are only interested in one thing, their own damn wallets. Mine! And trust me, their wallets are already a lot fatter than yours or mine. The sandbag job they did during the recent budget limit debate is proof enough of that. The Tea Party extremists in Congress brought this country to the brink of insolvency with their short-sighted and self-serving opposition to taxes on the rich. Seriously, that's all that was at stake. Rolling back tax breaks on corporations and households making over $250,000 a year. Not the average American knucklehead. But the Tea Party threw a hissy fit and almost sent this country into default, which would have caused God knows what sort of financial mess. But they didn't care. That didn't matter to the Tea Partiers because they're only in it for themselves. Now, there's a great example of this in an article from Rolling Stone from last October. The author of this article was at a Tea Party rally in Kentucky that featured the Alaska Quitter. And as she was going on and on about how the government's the problem and bitching about out-of-control government spending, the guy noticed that a substantial proportion of the audience was tooling around on those little motorized wheelchair scooters. And you know who paid for those things? Medicare. That is, you and me, friends and neighbors, our tax dollars. So this Rolling Stone guy goes and asks one of the Tea Partiers about their scooter and finally gets them to fess up to accepting this Medicare handout. Finally, the Rolling Stone author says, hey, how can you complain against the welfare state when you've clearly been benefiting from it? And the guy says, well, there's too many people on welfare that don't deserve it, but not me. That pretty much sums up the Tea Party philosophy. I'm adamantly, rabidly, unequivocally opposed to government spending unless it benefits me. Mine! Friends and neighbors, there's no question that the United States needs to clean up its act when it comes to its budget and its debts. It's like trying to lose weight. You can read all of the fad diet books, follow the latest programs, but at the end of the day, there's only one way to lose that weight. You eat less and exercise more. It's the same way with getting out of debt. The only way to do it is to increase your income and spend less so you can pay off the debt. Half measures will avail us nothing. End of story. So clearly the Tea Partiers aren't really interested in fiscal responsibility. They're just in it for themselves. Real change is going to have to come from somewhere else, friends and neighbors. And it's going to have to come from us American knuckleheads. It sure isn't going to come from the Tea Party, which offers nothing more than the reheated Reaganomics that didn't really work that well the first time around. No, real change is going to have to come from us, and that means everybody's going to have to pitch in and help. So for those of you who have been suckered into the Tea Party's false promises of real change and fiscal responsibility, I understand your confusion. Just know that the Tea Party isn't the answer, the Republican Party isn't the answer, the Democratic Party and Obama aren't the answer. The answer is going to have to be all of us working together, friends and neighbors, and making some sacrifices in order to get things back on track in the U.S. to provide a little homeland improvement. I've been making a lot of noise about how we really need a new political party. Two political parties, really. And I've proposed the creation of the Everyday Party. The Everyday Party will represent the interests of us everyday working American knuckleheads instead of just big money special interests and extremist whack jobs. I'm serious about this because we sure aren't going to get anything out of the two parties that we have now. Well, I have actually gone so far as contacting the state to see what would be involved with getting the Everyday Party listed as an official political party in the great state of Oregon. Turns out that all I need to do is collect 21,804 signatures on a petition, and we're in. Well, with the number of signatures that we've already collected, that leaves, let me see, I'll just do the math here. That just leaves 21,803 signatures to go. So we're already 0.004% of the way there. If you're interested in getting on board with the Everyday Party or just sharing what's on your mind, go ahead and drop me a line at joe@americanknucklehead.com. All right, good night. I've pretty much vented my spleen as much as I can for one episode. Right now, I'm going to go close all the blinds and gloat over my collection of precious plastic bags. Remember, y'all be good to each other out there. We're in this together.